This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
What up, Whiskey Ginger fans? Welcome back to the show. If this is your first time joining us, like I say, welcome to the show. Tell a friend, spread the word, give us a good rating, comment, do all that jazz. The library is rich with many, many other people that I'm sure you might like. And push it around to your friends. Get them hooked on that whiskey ginge. Today, my guest is Doug Stanhope. I love Doug. I've been a fan for a very long time. We have a couple of drinks and chat about all sorts of fun stuff. This dude is one of my favorite humans to exist, let alone comedians. He is incredible. So I'm really happy about this episode that I got to sit down and chat with Doug over a couple of drinks and a half pack of cigs on his end. Look, if you're looking to find out where I'm going, I don't know what to tell you. We're trying to figure it out during these crazy times. AndrewSantino.com is going to have the information that you might need to know about where I'm touring. And if I'm not touring anymore, it's because of the city. It's not us. If you're looking for merch, the merch bar right down below on YouTube. If you're on YouTube, there's a bunch of stuff down there. Hats, shirts, there's mugs, glasses. We got all that good stuff, dude. Go right down there or go to AndrewSantinoStore.com if you want the URL. Otherwise, you can just go down on YouTube. There's a merch bar right down there. The Patreon is Whiskey Ginger Podcast. That's where I'm doing these Zooms for the top tier. I'm doing Cheeto Chats. I'm trying to put exclusive content. We do early uploads of the episodes without ads. We do all sorts of stuff at the Patreon, so check it out. Patreon.com/WhiskeyGingerPodcast. AndrewSantino.com for whatever. AndrewSantinoStore.com if you're looking for the merch. Or click on the merch bar. Anyway, whatever. Grab a drink. Fill up. Enjoy the episode.
In here, we pour whiskey.
Creature in the ginger beard.
Sturdy and ginger.
Like vampires, the ginger gene is a curse.
Gingers are beautiful.
You owe me $5 for the whiskey and $75 for the horse.
Gingers, oh hell no.
This whiskey is excellent.
Ginger. I like gingers.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Whiskey Ginger. My guest today is one of my favorite people on earth. I say that for all my guests, but I mean it once again today. It's Doug Stanhope. Doug, hey.
Hello.
What's up?
Nice to finally meet you, sir.
Yes, nice to meet you via the internet due to the COVID issues. What are you sipping on, by the way? I should cheers you right away. Cheers.
Yes, cheers. I didn't know the whiskey ginger, or I would have had her pour me a whiskey ginger.
That's all right. What did you have?
A vodka soda, splash of grapefruit.
Is that the go-to now, or do you?
Yeah, standard.
Yeah. What, like, has it, as time has gone on, because you're a big drinker, I'm a big drinker, I've changed what my standard drink was, but whiskey has kind of always been, whiskey's always been my thing, but I never had a vodka phase. Did you have like a whiskey phase or?
No, I was always a beer and a shot guy.
Right.
But always beer, shitty beer, Miller Lite guy my whole career. And then I quit smoking in 2008.
Yeah.
And I got really fucking fat. So I thought maybe if I switch beer for a vodka cranberry, not knowing that that has like three times as much fucking sugar in it.
Yeah, it's pure sugar.
That's when I made the switch. And now I fucking love any kind of bar where they know how to make a drink that I couldn't make at home.
Right.
Like an old fashioned or
right.
Crazy makes me whiskey sours with egg whites, like proper.
Oh, that's nice.
Frothy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. My Irish blood of alcoholic trains has been, my grandfather was always a whiskey guy. My parents, same thing. And my grandpa drank Manhattans. Like, and what he would do is he would, because a lot of people didn't have sweet vermouth. That was never like a thing that, a lot of people just don't have it at their house. So my grandfather would carry around this little tiny, what looked like a, you know, it looked like a tiny briefcase or like a set of like poker chips.
I know exactly. I could probably show you the case.
Yeah. And he would keep sweet vermouth in there, his whiskey and a little thing of maraschino cherries. and he would take it with him, and he would call it his computer. He thought it was, you know, he thought that was the best joke on earth. He was like, "Oh, it's my little computer," and everybody was like,
"We would find those in thrift stores from the '60s."
And yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, take them backstage with us.
It was. It's a perfect thing for an alcoholic to like class up your problem. You know what I mean? It makes you look a little bit. It's not as embarrassing as showing up with a bag all the time, but he loved that. Like, he thought that was the coolest thing, was showing up with your own shit. Because my grandfather was always big on, you have to show up with something, right? You had to show up and you had to bring some kind of booze for them. And then he always said, you should usually just give them booze you don't care about drinking, because if you cared about what you brought, you shouldn't give it out, because someone's going to have it and then you're not going to fucking have it. So he was always like, bring your own shit and give them a thing for them. And it was a lesson I learned when I was like 12. And then now as an adult, you're like, the logic is perfect. Because if you do show up to somebody's house with something, it's gone. You're fucked. You're like, what a waste. I shouldn't have. I really wanted to have that.
I have new neighbors that just moved in. And actually a couple in the neighborhood where I go, I should give them like a bottle of wine or something. And you go, you can't really assume anyone drinks anymore. And right. The other thing was like Omaha steaks.
Right.
It's a great thing to send to people. But yeah, they're probably fucking sober vegans.
Right.
Waste all this fucking money saying hello to a neighbor.
Didn't you have to give them like Theo Vaughn, who's sober, brought over this non-alcoholic, I don't even know what this shit is called, but it's de-alkalinized whiskey. And I got to tell you, dude, it taste fucking atrocious. It's dog shit. It's such a far miss. It's like they tried so hard to like embody the flavors of whiskey, but without the alcohol, it's nothing. It's shit. Like, beer has done a great job, because beer is much simpler to make. It's much easier to make non-alcoholic beer, but to make non-alcoholic whiskey, yeah, honestly,
I've gone
it's
on
impossible.
Brief stints not drinking.
Yeah.
I've gone on brief stints of not drinking when I was a beer drinker, and fucking O'Doul's, just, yeah.
Yeah, you
just
pound
have it in your hand. It's like having a microphone on stage. It's
right. Well, you've done, like, all the specials that you've done, everything that I, you know, and I've been a fan of yours for a long time, and I've, like, almost every special you've ever done, you usually are drinking a beer. But for me, I'm not a big beer guy, but I do have beer on stage during shows because it's an easy sipping thing. I used to bring up whiskey when I first started touring, and I was feeling it by like the third, fourth year on the road, where I was like, well, I'm ripping 7 or 8 of these things a night just because of this on stage, you know, doing 2 shows back to back. And then
yeah.
I was just like, I can't keep drinking that much whiskey every night. It's just too easy. So for me, now I do beer on stage. It tempers my drinking, my drinking habits. It's too easy.
I like the cocktail straw. That's, I always pack my suit jacket with cocktail straws. Cause,
right.
You know, for stage purposes.
For stage, yeah, right. So look, you're out in Bisbee. When I had heard that you had moved down there, obviously we've never met in the real world, but I want to give you a little bit of props. I think you are, arguably, is what you have to say, or what is it? I'm accusing you of being one of the best stand-ups of our generation, of those that are alive right now. Whether or not I'm right or wrong doesn't matter to me, because I feel that way. And you've always kind of lived to me this this like true comics life, which I know it sounds cheesy, but you took off. You know, you lived in West Hollywood. You lived in LA, but you lived in West Hollywood for a while.
I started in Vegas,
right,
doing open mics, not knowing that nobody starts there.
Right.
And then and I moved to Phoenix and I get a gig as a house MC at a failing club, but I get to be on stage, you know, for all those shows every week.
Right.
And then I just started living out of my car till I moved to 3 years till I moved to LA in 2005.
Was the reason for you going back to Arizona, was it because of your stint in Phoenix?
I'm sorry, 1995. Sorry, I forget to say I'm a little bit really high.
Okay, good. That's good. That's good, dude. When you went back to Arizona, was that because you lived here for a short amount of time and like it made you fall in love?
No, that was just, yeah. I just went to Phoenix for a minute because I fell in love with a girl, which is always begs the question, as a drinker, have you made more embarrassing mistakes over love or over alcohol?
Well, they're one and the same usually for us. For people that drink a lot, that typically tends to overlap, right? Like, how many relationships did you get into because of alcohol or with alcohol? You know what I mean? Like the trappings of that you're like, I say that about Phoenix because I went to school, I went to Arizona State, and I have this thing in my heart for Arizona that I try to explain to people, but they don't really understand it because the desert has this, I wish I was smart enough to articulate it. The desert has this thing that pulls you to it for some reason. Once you've lived there, it's
a sweet stink of death.
Yes, man. It's beautiful.
It's like antifreeze. It tastes really good, but it's all death.
I think the stillness is amazing. Something about getting drunk in the desert when it's a summer night and it's so still, it feels like the earth isn't even fucking spinning. When you're drinking outside and hanging out outside in the desert air at night, I can't explain it. There's something that it did to me that I never felt any other time in my life. I'm from Chicago and I lived, you know, there in Phoenix, and then I lived here now in California, and something about that just, I don't know. There's something about Arizona. So
I'm drinking in Arizona and I'm picturing your vision as way better.
My version, right, is probably better than the real version. Well, what do they say?
Yeah, I'm seeing the purplish skies. Silhouetting on a cactus. And
right. Well, we used to get high on mushrooms and sit on my buddy's old house, his roof, and watch heat lightning storms. You ever watch, like when you, I'd sit outside and watch those. I fucking love them.
Yeah. I remember going through a field of them on the road going to El Paso. Yeah. It was like strobe lights.
I don't know. There's something about, I've always said this, to friends and family, I think at some point I do want to spend another small time in the desert because I do love it. I don't know why. Like, what drew you to Bisbee? Why did you end up going down there?
I had time off between gigs in Phoenix and El Paso. I had 3 days to kill. So I was just taking back roads and seeing what was around and found this place. And it's just fucking amazing.
Yeah.
So I just kept coming back. Anytime I was coming in and out of LA on the road, I'd always stop here for a day or two.
Now, do you go down? You're so close to Mexico. Do you go down to Mexico, or you don't fuck with that?
No, there's nothing you need down there.
Right.
I'm not. The town is across from us is like, 3,000 people. It's tiny.
Right.
So it's not like you're afraid for your life like I would be at most other border crossings. But yeah, there's still no reason to go. The kids here, they, not my actual kids, my producer and his wife, the Chaleys, they go down for lunch, but I don't like risking that fucking knuckle and what's supposed to just be meat.
Right. Yeah, it's not worth it. It seems to be not worth it. I mean, like, we used to.
I like somewhat authentic Mexican food.
You like Mexican food cooked by maybe some white guys, like a few white guys could cook it. Yeah, I'm fine with that. And I want my Italian food cooked by Mexicans. That's the only way I'll have it, you know? Now with all this shit going on, are you hunkering down in Arizona or are you getting out on the road?
No, I'm right here all the time. I fucking love it. Yep.
Do you feel like going back out at all or no?
I did the math and I realized I haven't slept in the same bed for a year since I was 15 or 17 years old.
Holy shit.
So it's like, it's having a whole new experience of actually being a homeowner.
Yeah.
Guy, neighbor that buys shit for the neighborhood. I'm that guy. I walk my dogs twice a day.
Like, did you put up Halloween decorations? Is that the guy you're becoming? Are you becoming a true suburbanite?
No, but Tracy and Chaley, his twin brother, they have a haunted house business. They make like all the fucking realistic real doll dead people and shit like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
So they always do a free haunted house. They make up the lot behind us into this big free haunted house. And this year they can't do it.
Oh, yeah. You know, like
they have all the shit. Like the people in town have no idea. They just put up flyers, free fucking haunted house. They have no idea the fucking dollar amounts of this shit. Like you would think that was a dead body if it was just laying there.
Right. I've seen those. I've gone to those houses, the prop houses where they make all that stuff. And the artistic ability of those people is super underappreciated. I mean that. The stuff they're able to do, it would blow the average person's fucking mind, but they just don't know how.
Listeners, go to ghostride.com, or is it Ghost Ride Productions? It's Ghost Ride Productions. Google
Ghost Ride. Go to Ghost Ride Productions. Yeah.
Fucking amazing.
Cool. Yeah, that stuff blows my mind. The talent that it takes, the ability to do that kind of shit, is always very underappreciated, right? People don't really think about the artistic ability you have to be good at something like that. It's the same way that, you know, people that don't like tattoos are just like, oh, you're just a person that does them. You're not an artist, but it's extremely fucking difficult. But it just kind of feels to culture not.
My
no
head is jumping all over the map with this, but
yeah,
that even more so than comics should be able to copyright their work. An original tattoo should have a fucking copyright.
100%.
Imagine the first person that had that cool tattoo, and now every douchebag has it, and it's hacking, and you can't get rid of it. Even worse than a joke thief.
Right, the first guy that did the barbed wire that every chick got because of Pam Anderson, you know, like the first tramp stamp.
The guy with a lawnmower and the pubic hair. I remember the first stripper I saw that on.
I've talked about this on the show. There's a great Instagram you should look at called Snake Pit, and they put up some of the most ridiculously phenomenal tattoos. Like, it's a lot of nudity. A lot of people, it's a lot of hypersexualized stuff. But like, there's one, my favorite one was a guy is hanging off of a girl's tit, and he's holding on, you know, it's her boyfriend holding on to her nipple. It's so great, dude. It's like the minutiae, the particulars of it. It's so small and specific. And yeah, they should be able to copyright that the same way that we should be able to have no one take our fucking jokes. What do you think the punishment?
You can write a new joke.
You're right.
You can only cover up a fucking hackneyed tattoo so many times.
That's true. What do you think the punishment should literally be when somebody does steal a joke and does it on something, right? Like when a joke is stolen, yeah, and it's done on something else.
To plug your show, the Comedy Store series, which is fucking absolutely makes me, the first time since before COVID, want to do comedy again.
Yeah.
Be part of comedy. So, yeah, your episode last night, that's what the punishment is.
Right.
Fucking Carlos Mencia was selling out fucking theaters everywhere.
Yeah.
He got
the repercussion of what he deserved. Yeah. Well, he got the repercussions of what was coming. It was almost like, you know, it's almost strange to think, you know how they say like some people want to get caught, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's almost as if he was so brazen, he wanted to get caught because he knew he didn't deserve it. Do you know what I mean by that? It's like,
yeah, well, I mean, when he did that Bill Cosby, "Hi Mom," that's like a classic story.
Yeah.
That's
Then you're outright just, I think it's almost, there's guilt.
If he had a bit about fucking, I was driving in my convertible doing acid on my way to Vegas when the bats came in.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so obviously Hunter S. Thompson. Yeah. Oh, no, it's parallel thinking.
He's like, no, I was on my fourth bottle of Chivas and I had my ninth bump of the hour. And yeah,
he's just direct ripping him off.
Eating an adrenal gland. Completely.
Yeah, I think there's guilt that's laid into fame and success. I think inherently many of us, especially in comedy, when you get a little bit of fame or success, there's so much guilt because of your friends in our world. A lot of them aren't doing well at all. We all kind of start at this bottom feeders club. So when anybody gets a little bit of success, there's guilt built in. And I think in his case, he felt guilty because he knew that everybody knew it wasn't real. So like the guilt kept spilling out of him until finally, I think he was just like, I'm going to do other people's shit and just get caught.
Well, most the decent ones of us have imposter syndrome.
Right.
So I'm just thinking, would that offset if you were just stealing your fucking jokes? Like if Carlos Mencia was actually an imposter, he wouldn't have the imposter syndrome that we all feel. Right. It's like, yeah, no, I'm cool with this. Right. You guys have a fucking problem. You all think you're pieces of shit. I don't care.
Right. That's like, that's like, what's his name? That guy, Mr. Brainwash, who, you know, because of the, do you know who that is? Mr. Brainwash? Have you heard of him? You should look up this documentary about him. He is, so in the height of Banksy, the graffiti artist, you've heard of that guy, Banksy. Yeah. In the height of Banksy comes this French photographer, sculptist, what the fuck ever, named Mr. Brainwash. And he, for lack of a better word, is a literal ripoff artist. He takes other art that already exists.
Oh, that documentary.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And this guy is so fuck you about it that it's almost like nobody's mad. Like what you're talking about, he is an imposter, but it's just part of what this is. It's like he literally he copied Andy Warhol shit to a T. It was the exact same thing. It was just a different color. It was like yellow or instead of red. And he's open about it. He's like, oh yeah, that's Warhol did something similar. You're like, it's the same fucking thing. But he's so, I don't give a shit about it, that it's acceptable or something. It's hard to describe.
In any industry, including ours, look at the people that you just can't fuck with.
Right.
Joey right. Diaz.
Right. You cannot fuck with that guy. No.
Yeah. Did I do that or not? What's it matter?
Yeah. Yeah. They tried to cancel him. And yeah. It was maybe the funniest thing. It's the funniest thing. I said to a friend of mine who's just, you know, a guy from back in Chicago had said, I saw this thing about Joey Diaz and he's a fan of the comedy world. And I said, yeah, it's all bullshit. And he goes, they're really going to try to cancel the guy whose catchphrase is like, you know, what's up, cocksucker? I was like, yeah, that's so true. It's like, how could you even make that? Like, what's the approach? Like, Your Honor, this man's catchphrase is cocksucker. Like, I really don't think you're going to sneak in a violation of language to a guy who lives by no linguistic rules. It's just, I think it's really annoying that that's become even somewhat of a narrative in our business, but I feel like it's going away. I feel like less and less those voices matter when they say, you can't believe what Stanhope said. It was so offensive. I just don't believe that's as prominent as people make it out to be, you know?
I remember doing Opie and Anthony.
Yeah.
And I was on and Dice was coming in. And he came in like a fucking, you know, the Kool-Aid guy through a brick wall, fucking on fire, spitting heat.
Right.
And they're like, and Opie and Anthony don't even get in a word. And he pulls out a cigarette and Opie just leans into the mic resigned and says, Dice is going to smoke in the studio. Because they're like, yeah, you don't say no. At some right. level, you're like, fuck. Yeah, it's Dice. If I lit up a fucking cigarette, no, get out of here.
Right. Now, did you, what you referenced before, which was very nice about the Showtime documentary that's out right now that I was a part of, that I'm happy to be a part of. They did an incredible job telling the story. But did you, a lot of those guys that I admired as a kid or look up to or I was like fascinated by, like the Carl LeBove story I talked about when Kinison died, I never knew that version of the story. I had heard a few different versions, but I didn't hear that one. And, you know, someone like Kinison to me was this entity I could never wrap my head around. Like Dice kind of was closer to me, in terms of I actually saw him more because Kinison had died before I got really into comedy and was old enough. But Dice felt like this crazy, crazy intense character where I feel like guys from a little bit before were just bigger versions of themselves. Like Dice was so much of a character, right? I mean,
yeah.
Did you know him well?
No, I didn't meet, that was the first time I met Dice that he recognized it was on Opie and Anthony.
Right, right.
And I was, you know, well ensconced. And he said, I saw your special, I thought it was funny. And then at some point I tried to chime in and tell him, like, he was the reason I started comedy. And he goes, yeah, I already told you, you're funny. You don't have to say anything.
He is a fascinating story because, you know, I think about like comics that I loved when I was young versus what young people now would like as, and I can't imagine the newest generation would have liked Dice. Do you know what I mean? Because times and, but it's just so, it's wild to think that like...
Comedy has very little shelf life.
Oh, almost none. Almost none. Right? Like, do you ever go back and look at any of the specials that you did years ago or albums that you put out? And do you ever like fucking loathe the material or completely disagree with what you were trying to push out or no?
I went out, last summer, I believe it was. I went out and I was just driving back roads of Arizona, forcing myself to listen to all of my specials that I put out, all my CDs,
Right.
And it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I mean, there's obviously bad parts, but I guess right. I dreaded it so much that I go, this isn't terrible.
You should
pretty good.
If you ever put out a greatest hits album, it should be called It's Not As Bad As I Thought It Was Going to Be. Because truly, I felt the same way of anything I've ever put down, and I haven't done a lot yet. You know, I'm only in the game, 13 years or something like that. And like, for me, I always admired when people like crafted something and then put it out. But now there's like a fucking rat race to put out as much shit as you can constantly. And it's hard for me because I was never good at that. And I don't know if I'll ever be good at that. But like, do you see that changing a lot too, of like everyone's trying to put out as much as they fucking can? And it's this weird clawing, you know?
Yeah, I got caught up in that for a second. And then I said, no, it's not necessary. The thing is, when you see one of your peers that you respect rush something that they shouldn't have.
Right.
And you go, no, don't do that. Don't follow that template.
Right.
I was going to start naming names.
No, do it. You can. Fuck it. No, but I know what you mean. Like a lot of people do. A lot of people do put out stuff before it's ready the almighty dollar.
That was the one that I put out before it was ready, was the one that was really cringeworthy when I was listening to all my shit. Is the Oslo, the one I did in Norway, that I was the photographer that was taking the cover art for the CD I was about to release, said, oh, I could film your show tonight and we could have a whatever camera shoot. And my manager's just seeing, oh, we get a fucking free fucking video. I'm like,
yeah,
I'm just putting out, I haven't even released the CD, I'm filming a DVD. And it was sad because a lot of that shit got so much better.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. But don't you find that that's...
Hang on.
Yeah. You're good.
Yeah. This is Bingo. She's the my wife that doesn't ever remember that I'm doing a podcast, but keeps calling in. Say hi to Andrew, Bingo.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
That couldn't have been more of a well-communicated feeling on both sides.
it's well-rehearsed because right. for years now. We're podcasting, so don't call, I'll call you.
Right, I love 20
that. 20 minutes in. Ding-dong.
Hey, I've got a request. Do you feel like you're at a place now where because of all this bullshit, because all this fucking COVID shutting down everything and blah, 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 do you feel like you're at a place now where when we come back, you're excited to go back, or you're kind of pensive about when it all comes back?
I honestly was not until I watched the Rogan episode.
Wow.
And I texted Rogan. I said, if I was as inspired all the time as I am right now, I'd be fucked because it means I'd have to get off the couch. And then he texted me back this morning. And you started to get into this. I looked and I saw that he texted. I still have not read it because when you were talking about we all start as fucking bottom feeders, like Rogan's in a place now where I'm uncomfortable to talk to him. Like, I don't want nothing. I'm just saying hi and stuff.
Right. Well, he knows that. I mean, look, I've gotten so close with Joe, and Joe took me on the road a couple years ago to open for him and got a taste of that life of like, you know, I play clubs and small baby theaters. And for the first time in my life, I played a fucking massive theater with him. And then we played arenas. And I will say, as phony as this might sound, I've never met a guy personally that successful in our business who still is a guy to me, who feels fucking normal to some degree, to whatever normal fucking means. But he doesn't ever do that thing where you're like, oh, he's bigger than big. You know, like I imagine Kevin Hart helicopters
in. He's never been anything but that guy to me. But at the same time, the bigger he gets, there's too many of those guys.
Yeah.
Where my manager's like, "Oh, call Rogan when I had the new book come out and the special." And I'm like, "I'm not calling him."
But it's funny that that's our reaction. But the truth is, he would always take a phone call from you. Do you know what I mean?
But
I'm also afraid of rejection enough that if he said, "No, I just can't have you on. People don't seem to like you." I'd rather not call.
That sounds like projection, not rejection. That sounds like you going, "People don't fucking like me. I'm not going to." You know what I mean? That's just, I do the same thing of like, I set myself up to fuck myself over so I don't have to have it done to me. You know what I mean? It's like, I'll do it. Yeah, I'll do it. I'll fuck myself. You don't need to fuck me.
Yeah, it's a self-defense mechanism, but totally. It works.
But do you find that you, like, when you did his show or whatever, did you feel negative vibes? Like, did you think people didn't like you because of it? Because that's not true.
Didn't like me because of what?
When you did his show, I'm saying, like, the last time you did a show.
Oh, no, I'm saying, what if he said that? I'd rather not call him than have him tell me some awful truth or not return my call at all or something.
Right. I get it. And also, you know, he made $100 million. I feel like if he did cut me out of his life, I'd understand. I'd go, sure, I'm not worth it anymore. I understand. I know what I am. I'm fucking...
Yeah.
I'm down here and you're up there. I told him, I said, as soon as you get that check, you better not start dabbling in the darkness of fucking those kind of people. I just feel like the moment you get $100 million, they're like, all right, so we have this basement of children. It's like, that's the next stage when you get that insanely rich. I just feel like it's a part of like this creepy system that exists.
He wouldn't stop working long enough.
Right. Right.
He threatened to come down here. He goes, you got to come down and visit you, buddy. He would hate it here. Because you see what I'm doing right now? That's what I do all day unless I'm sleeping.
Yeah, but
couch.
Maybe it's a good, maybe it'd be a good shift for someone like him who's like a, you know, like you've had so many guys go down there and hang out. Like Shane Gillis was just down there hanging out. And like, do people just come
Shane
down?
Shane can fucking hang out. Shane can just sit in the guest house and you won't see him until 5:30 at night. And he comes out in his fucking sweatpants.
Right.
And it's very, he doesn't need to be amused.
Right.
I would have to fucking, I have a stray puppy in there with a fucking cone on its head. He's like fucking this giant fucking Doberman fucking puppy that I've had for a week. I took it as a stray. My dog hates it. My fucking cat won't come back. And all he does is jump around. He's as tall as me. He kicks me in the fucking back of the head with his front paws. And a week of that. Like, that's what Rogan would be like to me.
Right.
To have
right.
Rogan down here. Well, let's go check out that. You want to go? Yeah, let's go. You want to shoot guns? Yeah, we'll go shoot guns.
Right.
Yeah. Joe Rogan would be a fucking restless puppy down here.
Do you, how many people come down? Because you, I've heard you talk about this before. You used to have more of like the open door theory, if that's even the phrase, but like people would come down more often. Are you getting less and less into people coming to visit or no?
It's always been the same. Like if I'm in the mood, I was walking that stupid fucking dog the other morning and I'm on a small side street and I hear a car behind me going real slow. I'm like, it's a fan. No reason to slow down for me. there's a couple and they said, hey, they were like professors. And they said, hey, I just want to say big fans. We just took some pictures of your house. I go, I was just grabbing my dog, you know, meet me back at the house and we'll take pictures inside and had a Bailey's of coffee in the morning and they were on their way. And that's because I was in the mood and they happened to see me. Most people just show up and take some pictures. And if we happen to see them and we're on the patio and we're in the mood, yeah, fuck it. Come on in.
Right.
And it ain't close to anywhere. And there's not that many people that want to fucking meet me.
Right, like when you do go, I thought about this the other day. When you go, when you are going out on the road, how inconvenient is it to get home? Does it take you a long time to get back from the road or no?
It's an hour and 45 minutes from my house to the one stoplight in between my house and an hour and 45 minutes to where you exit for the airport.
Wow. So it's like living in fucking LA.
Which beats fucking trying to guess LA traffic and fucking honk. No. Nobody desert is fucking gorgeous.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Well, it's much better. I'm all joking aside, I said it's like living in LA, but truthfully, that's why so many people right now are leaving LA, because a lot of comics, A, they feel like they don't need to be here anymore at this point in the world. And also, at some point, everyone that was traveling got so sick of having to do that LA thing that they're like, fuck it. I'd rather start in the middle of the country where I can get other places much easier. And I feel it. You know, I talked to Tom Segura the other day, and, you know, they're going to be going down to Austin as well. And I get it. It's just easier to get everywhere. And this has become such a weird burden now out here, you know? So I understand it.
Austin's probably in my top five worst traffic cities in America.
Yeah, it's insane down there too. I mean,
because you have to take the 35. There's no fucking surface street. You're right. Stuck on that miserable fucking.
Well, that's why I've always said that.
Almost a lateral move to LA. They already think they're fucking cooler than they are.
Right. It is. It's the same. It feels similar to Los Angeles. That's why I always said it's like, what's going to happen even more is L.A. shit is going to move down there, right? Like the L.A. thing, you know, whatever's happening up here already is going to go down there. So
what happened to the Las Vegas Strip?
Yeah.
I just saw the Strip I go to Vegas a bit, but I'd never stayed on the Strip, and I stayed in the heart of it, and it's fucking grotesque. It's a long mall. Like,
yeah,
you can't even get to the sidewalk in places.
No, it's so gross. Well, when you go to Vegas, are you at all... Do you at all play? Do you gamble at all, or no? You don't fuck with any of that.
No, I gambled was September 4th, I think, of last year. I went to the Impractical Jokers had a bachelor party there. I guess that's not a secret anymore. I wasn't supposed to tell, but it's...
yeah, it's out. It's out now. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So I went there, and I was really pissed off. As I usually am when I leave Vegas, and all the elevators went out, and I got a bingo upstairs, and I can't get to her, and I was fucking angry, and so I just sat down and I put $100 and I won $5,000 on a poker machine sitting there waiting
Shut
for a fucking
fuck
elevator
up.
To come back on.
That's and
I go,
insane.
Yeah, I haven't gambled since.
Smart man. I mean, I feel like comics are all addicts to some degree. You know, it's like we all are. No, it depends on what the addiction is.
Just before I forget, I do bet on sports, but that's different.
No, I don't mean that. Yeah, that to me is way different. I think
$10 bets.
Yeah. No, I don't. That to me is different. I think sitting at a table and doing that thing. I think comics are addicts of all kinds.
Sports end.
Yeah, sports are over at some point. That they don't close the fucking table. Roulette, poker, all that shit never stops. I never got into it. No, I used to play cards, and then I realized it was really strange. I was at a friend's house in like a tournament, you know, and I never was into high stakes stuff because I'm such a pussy about money. I never grew up with a lot of money. So now that I have a little bit, I'm like afraid they're going to fucking take it from me in the middle of the night. So I never am a guy that's like, yeah, fucking, I got no big game. But, I was sitting at the table looking around, and for something, I must have been the booze, but it just hit me. I just didn't give a fuck anymore. I was like, I don't even really like doing this that much. Like, the camaraderie is fun, but I'd rather do that not thinking about this game, you know?
Yeah. When I didn't need the payoff was when it became boring.
Right.
I didn't start gambling with the amount of, like, I've always been a skimpy gambler, but I'll do it fucking voraciously and stay. It's like cocaine. It's the exact same feeling as cocaine.
Right. Yeah.
And then when I didn't need the reward, what am I doing this for?
Right. It feels
$1,000. I have $1,000.
Yeah.
That's not earmarked for anything.
Right.
Like, there's $1,000 that just sits there. Why would you?
That's the same way I feel like at a sporting event when they shoot out a t-shirt cannon and people fucking claw each other's eyeballs for it. I'm always like,
Berg's joke.
Yeah. It's like, well, you're wearing t-shirts.
Berg's joke about handing out flyers.
Right.
I hate people handing out flyers. It's like they're saying, here, you
throw this away. Yeah.
Sure it is. That says fucking Bob's Auto or Jägermeister.
Right. it just feels so, it's like, I always was mind bending. Is like people are fist fighting for a t-shirt they will never fucking value or wear. It feels the same when you gamble. You're like, this is meaningless as fuck. You know?
No, until you see the guy wearing one. Get that out of a fucking t-shirt,
Tana. Yeah.
I ain't like, never won nothing in my life.
You ain't taking this away from me, Stanhope. I'm fucking wearing this shirt, pal. Yeah, I feel like the emptiness.
I grabbed it from your face. I wasn't trying to catch it.
I needed this shirt. I wanted this shirt. In fact, you know what I did? Speaking of which, I caught a foul ball at a baseball game that bounced off of the dugout of the opposing team. And I had the ball, and I thought, this is what a cool fucking thing. I got this foul ball. And then I saw a kid, and I just gave it to him because I thought, what am I going to do with this fucking foul ball? Like, the kid was so excited. I just like had this out of body experience of like, what am I going to place this in my fucking house somewhere? Where would it go? And who cares?
In my thrift store pile, we used to have a baseball team, like not even semi-pro, under pro, but they'd play every summer down three blocks away. And we'd always go down and make assholes of ourselves and heckle. And,
right.
But we're about the only people that would go to games. And we had a big wrecking crew. And they autographed, one team autographed a baseball, all the players at the end of the season for us. And it's in a thrift store pile. I kept that like, well, they signed it for us.
Right.
It's been in a crawl space for 9 years and I never thought about it. So fucking throw it away.
It's always
one of my best parts of COVID has been organizing and getting rid of shit that I never use.
What's the most surprising thing that you were like, bought it, was invested in it, loved it or whatever, and you were like, fuck it, we never used it, we threw it away, or you gave it away?
One that I cared about, I'd have to think about that. I remember buying, I would get, you know, airplane drunk is the best drunk. And there was always a Brookstone on my layover in Minneapolis or in Atlanta.
Sure.
And I would go in there drunk and I never used it. I never figured out. It was this giant podcast player that was like waterproof. And I think there was a picture of it in a pool or something on the box. And that sat around for years because I spent like $200 on it or something. I don't even know how to use an iPod. but someone will want to use this and it never get used.
So the thrift store pile, is it being compiled now to like just get rid of all that shit and you're going to have? What are you going to do with it? You're going to have people come and buy shit?
No, I just drop it at the thrift store. Anything of value, we do eBay yard sale. We've been done for years, but we usually do it all this shit at once. Like, how many fucking posters of yourself do you need that are, someone will actually enjoy this rather than me after 30 years still having to collect fucking memorabilia?
It is creepy. In my closet when we moved, I had like pins. They were like shirt pins that a graphic designer friend made for me. And I was like, why do I still have a box? I should just give these to people. My wife was like, just fucking give those to people. What the fuck are you going to do with those things? Like, what an insane thing to have for no reason. She was like, someone will like them. Give it away.
Well, a fan, if it's noteworthy of your career, a fan will like it. So
of course.
So we're doing one item a week. I think Black Friday, we might put out a bunch of shit that ends on Black Friday. But I found a ton of that shit because I get a lot of free time and all this stuff that you think you'll never get to. Fuck the crawl space.
Right.
I went through the crawl space. I found report cards from when I was a kid.
Holy shit. Were you good at school as a kid?
No. I was bad at some stuff, but I just wasn't into it. I just waited till I was old enough to leave.
But I feel like most comics may have been bad students, but were actually smart, but just school was fucking impossible.
I was a bright kid.
Yeah, see? That's what I mean. Is like, I guarantee you could have been what is an exemplary student, but it's just school is hard for the way that our brains work. It's really difficult.
Well, if they had the classes that I was interested in.
Right. That's exactly
right. Algebra.
The fuck? Yeah. It's a nightmare. Like they.
Who would do that on purpose?
When I learned, well, I think when I learned that, like, I went to college and I went for journalism and English, I learned that it was like, oh, I'm only taking three classes, but they're only things that I give a fuck about that I have genuine interest in. And I became like a good student. Like my dad was like, holy fuck, are you doing good in school? I was like, yeah, it's like the thing I like, you know, like I was a fuck up in high school because it was so boring or unamusing or uninteresting. I was just so like,
yeah.
It was like this vapid wasteland of information. And of course, the way that our minds are working, I'm trying to find the comedy and how bored I am and fucking shit on things. So inevitably, I was a terrible student.
Able to tell the teacher, hey, tell me how to do this.
Right.
Teacher should be, hey, I hired you, lady.
Yeah, they should be plug and play.
Here's what I want to know about. And if you have to look at a YouTube video and then tell me about it, that's what I want to know how to do.
Teachers should be human Google. We should just be able to ask them and they should find out for us. That's it. It should be just like that's the give and take. Because I never understood this system of putting kids through this ringer of information that they don't give a fuck about and it's not engaging at all. Like my, you know, our nieces are, they're young and they're going through the Zoom learning or whatever. And I was like, if it wasn't hard enough for kids to not give a fuck about school, now they can do it on a computer and definitely not give a fuck about school. It becomes, you know.
Fucking Google should be school.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Give a kid a computer.
Yeah. He's going to figure it out.
In here, we pour whiskey.
Big drinkers out there, whiskey ginger drinkers. I know a lot of people that listen to the show like the sauce, just like I. And the next day, you don't feel so good. Halloween's coming up. If you're partying, you got to have something to help you out the next day. DHM Detox is phenomenal. I've talked about them before, man. No Days Wasted is here to help you maximize life's moments, those over feeling bummed about the day after drinking. You got to try this stuff. DHM Detox is the vitamin for people who like to enjoy drinks. Tens of thousands of people are using DHM Detox as their drinking buddy. Enjoy your drinks. Forget the Sunday series and feeling like garbage. Take two capsules, all right, after your first couple of drinks and it goes to work. If you want to take more, you can double down. DHM Detox uses science to help boost your body's natural response to alcohol and help break down the toxins, all right? They're easy to share with friends and family, simple to hand out. They're very safe. They've just launched their new hydration replenisher with immune support, which is incredible, especially because everyone's feeling a little yick right now. Delicious watermelon lemonade electrolyte drink to help you maximize, rehydrate, and help support your immune system with vitamin C, D, and zinc. It's legit. You need that stuff. Hydration anytime, morning, evening, exercise, travel, paired perfectly with DHM Detox. Honestly, it is good. I've tried it. I do love this stuff. As the day gets shorter and colder, make sure you're thinking about your immune system, and hydration replenisher is here to give you that much needed boost. They've got No Days Wasted has a risk-free purchase. So if you're not satisfied, to give you your money back. It's a no-brainer. Try it out. What do you got to lose? At the very least, you know, they'll give you a refund if you're not happy. I've got 20% off your first order and free shipping in the United States. Just head over to nodayswasted.co/whiskey. Use the promo code whiskey at the checkout. That's nodayswasted.co/whiskey. That promo, as always, ginger. Is whiskey.
I like gingers.
So are you, I'm asking you because we're in the, obviously in the middle of this World Series now. Are you a big, are you a baseball fan or you don't give a fuck?
2-1 Dodgers.
Yeah. Yeah, baby. There it is.
That's Sky Reezy.
Yeah. So.
No, I'm not a baseball fan at all, but
no.
It was when sports came back, we have it on all the time. Whatever sports are going, we always have it on in the funhouse. But actually, I kind of got into baseball since it was all it was on for a minute.
Right, right. Did you, when you grew up, you're an East Coast guy, you're Massachusetts, right? Did you grow up with sports influence? Because that's everyone over there is a fucking sport head.
I was the iconoclast. Even if I didn't give a fuck about the sport, I hated the local team. So I hated the Celtics.
Right.
And, you know, I'd root for whoever they were playing against. until I left. And once I left and moved to LA in 85, so that was at the height of, you know, Bird and Magic.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden I was a Celtics fan. So
do you give a fuck now at all? Do you have any allegiance whatsoever?
Well, I always have a favorite team. I think it's very important to have a favorite team, even sure. if you don't like the sport.
Right.
I'm a Wolverhampton Wolves fan.
Nice.
That was a good gig.
Right.
And I don't know who's in the new XFL, but I was a Las Vegas Outlaws fan of the original XFL. You're going to have a favorite. But yeah, I'm an Arizona Cardinals fan.
Oh,
nobody
nice.
Else is.
In no Arizona. One else. I know. Well, when I was leaving Arizona, they were building that new stadium in Glendale. Because when I was in school, they used to play at ASU. They still shared ASU stadium with, you know, with the college. And it was fucking great because the remnants of that a pro football team in our college stadium, they still could serve beer. So a lot
Improv
of
Improv was across the street.
Right across the street.
I yep. always looked at that stadium thinking that would be one of the coolest stadiums to be in. And I never went.
It was awesome, man. It was and we would you could go watch a pro football game for the same price as a fucking college game. I mean, it was, you know, because the Cardinals have always been the Cardinals. So like we would go there for $10 student tickets and get blacked out of our minds and be right on our campus. It was so much fun.
I've been to only a few football games, but enough to know that no matter what the seats, you'd prefer to be a cardboard cutout. Right. Football live is the most fucking tedious thing ever.
It's better to be at home.
Watch at home with your friends and you're bullshitting during the commercial breaks and during the timeouts and during the fucking, you know, kickoff that's not going to get
right.
returned. And when you have to watch that shit without fucking conversation or distractions and you have to walk fucking three stories for a beer, fuck that.
It's severely inconvenient. My favorite live, I've always said, if you've never seen Hockey Live, go see Hockey Live. Hockey Live to me is the fucking best. Hockey Live to me trumps every fucking sport. Yeah, it does, yeah, by far.
Yeah.
It's
obviously baseball because you don't care.
Yeah, baseball is baseball I've seen the most of, but it's not. It's just because I go to baseball games on the road when I'm alone. You know, sometimes I'll always take a feature to the game with me if my friend Chris goes, but if I'm with somebody that doesn't give a fuck, I'll go by myself because it's a sport where you don't even have to be there to be there. You know, I can have a couple beers and nothing really matters and come and go whenever the fuck I want.
It feels like a bar.
It does. It really does. It is. It's a big fucking bar that happens to have a little bit of action every.
There's a
15
titty
minutes.
Bar. My favorite titty bar. The only one that I'd actually still go to is Mary's in Portland. It's on the corner of Burnside and Broadway. And it's like a corner pub that just happens to have some fucking suicide girls playing the jukebox and getting completely naked. But you can just sit there and talk. And that's what baseball is like. It's, can look over there at the game if we get run out of shit to say to each other.
Portland
that's does. Why it's on in here. In case we run out of
in
shit.
In case you
to
run
say.
Out of shit. Yeah, we'll flip it around. Portland has that. Portland has that. The way that they've done strip clubs is fucking phenomenal. It's impressive as shit because they're really just unique bars. You know what I mean? They're not like a strip club in L.A. is a typical L.A. bullshit strip club, and they're all the same. But for some reason, Portland has found a way to make it so cool to just hang out there and not really be involved. You know?
The first one I went to, I was when I was living out of my car. And some fans from the show said, oh, you can crash at our place. And they said, oh, tomorrow they have the fucking like $7 steaks at wherever titty bar. And they were so serious. It's the best steak ever. You're going to love. Like they completely didn't care about the titty bar aspect
right.
of it. This is like a fucking good steak.
I bet you it was, though. I bet like that's they've made it not
more
you know,
into.
Yeah, it's more casual.
Or do you go look at those tits?
Right. Which is what most restaurants should start adopting, by the way. If you do get bored, they should just have tits roaming around restaurants. You know, Buffalo Wild Wings.
The same way they used to put, like, trivia questions on sugar packets. So if you were on a date and you needed something to talk about.
Right, to stare down.
Actually, isn't that a, I think that's a scene from Monty Python, Meaning of Life, isn't it? Where is death it? Comes at the end.
Oh, yeah. And he's, oh, right.
They're having dinner and they're reading like Trivial Pursuit cards or something.
Right. You're a big Python guy, huh?
I was when I was a kid. And
yeah. Yeah. If, to me, it was like my first introduction to, when I was young, what I called smart comedy. When I was a kid, I was like, this is what smart comedy is. I learned.
The National Lampoon magazine.
Yeah. That see, I wasn't. I'm 37 and the magazine wasn't our generation, like, but I hear that it kind of shaped how so many comics grew up with this newfound freedom of like insane off the wall fucking whatever comedy that didn't exist before.
No, it was definitely an influence.
Yeah, I think when I first saw Monty, I learned about why I kind of got turned on by British humor was because it was always dark and smart alecky and snarky and a little condescending, but also like they were making fun of you, but they were also making fun of them. And I was always impressed by that about British comedy that, you know, a lot of times American comedy was such a rock star mentality and it was so the opposite for them, which is why I fucking horned out on them for years. Because I just was fascinated by the idea of like you could be self-deprecating, but also shit on the person right in front of your face.
This would have been when I found Monty Python and National Lampoon, pretty much predated stand-up. Like yeah. Stand-up was starting to grow at that point, so it was like 77. It would have been
right, but it was just the era of what comedy was to come, right? Or what was to be this, the larger form of sketch and comedic film and comedic groups that started to grow from that, you know?
Yeah, I remember growing up, my mother loved the Carol Burnett Show.
Right.
And I would try to stay up for 10 o'clock on Saturday night. I'm going to stay up all night tonight. And I'd always fall asleep. But I also didn't find it funny.
Right, because it probably wasn't. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't.
No, but I liked watching people around me laugh.
Right.
And found better shit, and then you know.
Well, when I was
Saturday
a kid,
Night Live in its heyday
was yeah, and now it's a
and when you're that age, show. You're fucking 11 years old or something. Yeah, Saturday Night Live can be funny for every generation if you don't grow up.
Totally.
Fucking horrible show.
When it was in its moment for me as a kid, it was untouchable. But then I think, do kids now think it's untouchable the way that I did? And it's just because I'm older and I'm not a part of it?
I can't imagine any kid liking Saturday Night Live. Now it's their parents' Oldsmobile. It's fucking awful. It's fucking awful. Like every few years, I couldn't name you one cast member in the last fucking 20 years on Saturday Night Live. maybe two.
Right.
But I'll record it and then I'll watch it, and I never get past like three sketches, and like this is fucking jaw dropping fucking awful.
Do you still watch it?
Trump's biggest war crime is making that show relevant in the news. For a second.
I said somewhere in his dark cave, Lauren Michaels is counting money and writing thank you letters to Trump because it reinvigorated that show. It made that show. It like
I know.
He owes him everything.
I mean, I don't care for the image of kids in cages either, but no, I don't want to fucking see who's playing. I don't even know the elected official anymore. I could care less so much. And I watched the Bill Burr one because you have to. Yeah. It was Bill Burr. And he did fine. And his sketch was fine, but then everything, just like the cliche stereotype of that show, it goes like eight times too long. All right, that could have worked if you stopped right after the first time you did the punchline.
It's like a musical comic, you know, like when they read the first chorus, you're like, that's the punch, And then you're like, you're gonna do it again? I already heard it. You just told it to me.
Yeah, it's fucking so fucking lazy.
Right. There was a guy, speaking of musical comics, there was a guy named Stephen Lynch. Do you remember him?
Only because he toured with Hedberg. I remember downloading some of his shit from Napster, I believe.
Same. Yeah, same. Same.
And rape a baby, rape a baby, rape a baby. Hey, that's like people who fucking, respond. My fans try to emulate me and a lot of times do it poorly.
Right.
So they'll just put, cunt, retard, faggot, or whatever into a sentence.
Right.
You've used three bad words. I get it.
Right.
Find them. But there's no joke there at all.
Right. With no context.
Stephen Lynch, his songs, I remember going, it's just saying the same
over and over.
Right. Over and over. That was the thing I learned.
So it was kind of biased because he toured with Hedberg, co-headlining. Chailey was the tour manager. They didn't get along. And Hedberg was my friend. So,
yeah, he was. He was my. I saw him at the Tempe Improv when I was in school, and it was his second or third to last show before he went east and passed away. Because he passed away on the East Coast, right?
Oh fuck! I thought you were talking about Stephen Lynch.
No. He's still alive. He's here now, Stephen. No, when Mitch did a show. And I remember, dude, I remember so vividly. I was so fucking excited. The girl I was seeing at the time, she couldn't give a fuck about comedy. And it was like my secret disgusting obsession, because I didn't admit that I wanted to be a comedian yet, but I was obsessed. And I was like, you got it. When this guy Mitch comes, you'll have to see. This will be fucking comedy. I know you'll like this. And if you don't like this, I'll fucking kill you where you stand. And and I remember going and being just, I don't know, man, like the fanship of me like kind of took the moment into like this extremely memorable, wonderful, incredible comedy night for me. And then to learn a week, maybe 2 weeks later, he had passed away was, it was a mind fuck. And to be honest, was part of the reason why I was just like, fuck it, I'm going to do stand up. I mean, his death was almost like the reason that I was, because I was scared of moving to L.A., I was like, I can't fucking move to LA, dude. I was in Phoenix. I was in Phoenix going to school. And I thought I was just going to go back to Chicago. And I was like, I can't, I don't have any money. I don't know. LA is filled with people that I know nothing about. And it was when he died, a friend of mine was like, you should really just go try that stand-up thing that you love so fucking much. And I think that was part of the impetus, not the only thing, but part of it was me going, fuck it, man. Like, whatever. I you know what I mean? Like I'm either going to go back to Chicago and get a job doing construction, because that's for sure what my intellectual level was going to allow me. I couldn't get an office job. I was like, I can do stuff with my hands, but I was like, I either that or I'll just go try it at least. So that was part of the reason.
Yeah. He was a big part of the reason that I left LA, his death.
Yeah. Oh, when he died, you were done. Huh?
I don't want to do anything that they have to offer here. I just want to do the road.
Right.
And get the fuck out of here. I hated that place for 10 years and never thought to leave.
Isn't that weird? So many people that move here, we hate it. And yet you're this magnet to stay. It's like you're forced to stay.
I would always get every time I thought to leave, I would get some fucking carrot. You do this pilot, it pays like 25 grand. Probably never get picked up, but do it. And so and then I did the math on it, which is my worst subject. And I go, for all this shit I keep staying around just for the fucking free, easy money, what I'm spending is fucking outrageous compared to anywhere I wanted to live that I liked.
100%
would be way less money. That would add up to all these fucking stupid projects you get in LA that you don't even want to do. Right. Just do the road. You get a dog.
Right. And you do the road and get a fucking dog. I got a dog out here to supplement
Hang on, this is a good breaking point. I didn't want to interrupt you earlier, but I got to read my sponsors. Will you pour another fucking drink? Because you
set
this out. I think we're off the air.
Which, I didn't want to interrupt
drink
you.
Because I don't want to drink alone, and you've not touched the fucking drink.
I'm done.
Fourth.
I've been sipping on ice. Hold on 1 second. I didn't want to interrupt you to get another fucking drink.
Give me that ad copy. Hang on. I do actually have ad copy. And this is some goofball. He's in the 9th district in Michigan. Hey, 9th district in Michigan listeners, are you voting? It's time for you to vote. And if you're in the 9th district, my fellow Americans, Congress sucks. In 2010, the Democrats were in power, and Congress had an approval rating of only 17%. In 2018, the Republicans had control of Congress, and their rating was only 18%. So it's time for you to just say no to Congress and defund politicians. It's time to vote for American hero Mike Saliba. Mike Saliba believes in legalizing all of the things. He believes in pansexual family units, protecting their LSD labs with 3D printed machine guns. Mike Saliba will just say no to Congress and vote no on all bills that don't increase American freedom and defund politicians, paid for by the commission to elect Mike Saliba. And we're back with this show. Andrew, you look a lot
Cheers.
More comfortable now.
I
Cheers
am.
To you.
I am very much. Who? Mike Saliba. That was a Mike Saliba ad?
Yeah. You know, for our 9th district of Michigan Congress voters mm-hmm. that want to vote for someone who mentions LSD and pansexual families and 3D machine gun printers.
Which is all some of my favorite stuff, I guess. I mean, that all kind of adds up.
I think a lot of my 9th district people would Google, search where the 9th district is.
Yeah, I don't even know where that is. Yeah, you probably do. Thicker than you imagine, by the way. Where's
Michigan,
the place?
We did last year, we did like 7 towns in Michigan. I fucking love Michigan.
Yeah. Where did you, what do you play when you do that? Do you do just like, do you do music clubs?
It depends. That one, well, we did so many, we were in places I'd never been, like Traverse City.
Yeah, Traverse City.
Some bar and some, I don't fucking know, but I don't have a lot of standards in Michigan, except for the machine shop in Flint. Fucking crazy. Every time I played there, it's fucking, I had a guy thrown out, like in the first 3 minutes, a guy rushed the stage. Yeah, I hadn't even said anything offensive, much less good evening. And this guy's like, thrown right out the side door. And you just roll with it. And it,
is that your favorite way to do it, is to hit a bunch of cities in a place and just do like night after night after night after night and do one show a night?
Well, when we're driving.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we can map it out. It's a fun drunk game. All right, what if we just did this whole, because I haven't been to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan since I was a fucking kid. Well, I mean, a kid comic. Right. So, yeah, let's, when you're drinking, a lot of those ideas, you go, oh, that would be fun to be in the Upper Peninsula. And then you're there and you're not drunk. Right. And you go, it's how long to the next time? 6.5 hours.
It's a nightmare.
I booked this, and you have no one to blame but your drunk self, but you two never meet.
Yeah, you never get to meet that guy. But you do have moments of like flashback of him, and it is a little disappointing. I have these moments of flashbacks to when I was so fucked up in Arizona. And I used to go to a place called Filiberto's. They made my favorite burritos.
Breakfast burritos. They're still going.
Oh, I fucking love Philly B's. And,
yes.
And being so shit-faced and eating Philly B's, I would eat it. It's so weird. I would get drunk and I would eat it somewhere. I would like hide. I don't know why, but I'd like hide like underneath an apartment overhang, like a balcony. But it was just comforting for some reason. And maybe... maybe it was my internal being like, if you die, at least, you know, you're in like a cove where they can find you. I don't want to die with the burrito like on the main road. I want to die kind of tucked away. So, but those flashes of.
I have a friend. She was a pretty bad drunk.
Yeah.
And she said that once she got really shit faced, she would hide her keys from herself to punish her sober self in the morning. I go, oh, I wish that was my story.
Yeah. It's a punishment. It's a polar opposite for me. I try to set myself up to win the next day. I'm always like, let's do this. So tomorrow, so I find stuff when I get drunk that I'm like, oh, look at that. I set that up so I will brush my teeth when I wake up. I didn't do it before I fell asleep or passed the fuck out, but I put the toothbrush near the toothpaste near my bed to go, hey.
Nice. Yeah. Too tired. Yeah. To no, do you it. Learn those tricks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll sleep naked to remind myself to bathe.
Yeah, I sleep naked.
I never take my clothes off. So if I wake up naked alone,
you have to shower.
Oh, bath time. That's right.
you have to shower. You know what? I said this. I started sleeping naked during the pandemic, or a little bit before this shit started, and now I'll never go back. I used to, you know, sleep with shorts on or something, and now I sleep naked. It's the best thing I've ever done.
You know, honestly. I don't have hair past my mid calf because all growing up as a teenager, I would just sleep in my clothes and my socks, and that's back when you had the 70s socks that went all the way up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I still don't grow hair there.
Why did you sleep in your clothes when you were young?
I'm just too lazy to fucking take them off. The same reason I sleep on my clothes now.
You do? You sleep fully clothed?
Now I live in pajamas.
Right, same. But will you sleep fully clothed for real?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean, fully clothed is usually a pajama-like outfit.
Yeah.
I either wear the stupid suits I wear on stage, or I'm in pajamas.
I could be way wrong, and I don't know what I'm talking about, but when I always saw the way that you wore suits on stage that were usually throwbacks, you know, old school suits.
Yeah, 70s vintage plaid.
Is it your answer to the suit era, or is it just because you are?
No, it actually started young. When I was a telemarketer, my mother, because we'd dress up, we always went thrift store shopping,
right?
And we'd find goofy shit for funny. And so she would ship me back before it was vintage. This is, you know, late 80s. It wasn't cool to have fucking 70s polyester.
Right.
And she'd send me these jackets she found I got it for a quarter. And we'd make the new guys in the telemarketing office wear them and tell them it was the trainee's uniform. So right. I was always fond of those. And I'd always wear those around occasionally as a goof.
Right.
But I liked wearing... anytime I used to wear a fucking Santa hat year round for a year. No reason. When I was
just
a kid.
Because. Yeah, just because.
But well, I realized when I started like committing to those suits, it was like when you get too fucking bloviating and angry, being dressed like half a clown helps take the edge off of when you're screaming and yelling.
Right, right. When you're really laying into fucking hard, real shit. It softens the mood when they see you in something flowery and puffy from 1976.
Yeah. And I fucking love putting outfits together. I'm gay as fuck when it comes to me and Chaley. He's my tour manager and my producer here.
Yeah.
Yeah. We dress in the, you know, same shit on the road and we're fixing each other's collars and that tie. Do the dark shirt with the fucking weird tie. Yes, that's good.
Do you kiss? You got to kiss before you go on stage. Fucking,
what's that?
You got to kiss before you go on stage. You have to just a little smooch. That's how you say you look good. You look good. Little kiss, kiss, and then move on.
It's not uncommon.
Right, right. As you must. I feel like because what I loved about you wearing those vintage suits was that. To me, that's why I asked you about it, because I was always blown away by guys that wore suits because of Carson. I think because they did this thing where it's like, you got to wear a suit when you did Carson. And then when people were doing any sort of TV, they would dress up. And I've never been a dress-up guy, but when you did it, I was like, if I was ever going to wear a suit, it would have to be a fun suit. The boring, stiff suit to me is the death of comedy. It's such a weird look for a guy that's telling jokes.
It depends. It fits some acts.
Yeah, Seinfeld. I mean, who else?
Fucking Seinfeld couldn't go out fucking dressed in a tracksuit like fucking Shane Gillis.
Yeah, I know, but it's like, Yeah, I guess it fits your, it fits the act specifically, but I don't know anybody that could wear a suit in our current generation. I mean, who could?
I always encourage people to get a look. I remember Junior Stopka. I don't know if you know Junior.
Uh-uh.
This fucking brilliant kid out of Chicago, and he's a great opener, but he just doesn't care. He pretty much has the act that he's going to do, and it's funny every time to me.
Sure.
But he's this big lumbering. He looks like a mixture of Hedberg and the Indian from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's this giant lummoxy kid, and we always try to dress him up because all we do on the road, we find sushi near the club and find all the thrift stores. And we just hit thrift stores looking for weird shit. And that's our only hobbies. I don't want to go see the fucking museum. I don't care about fucking, I'm not like Bill Burr. I want to hit every college stadium. No, thrift stores and weird shit. And we would try to dress this kid up in anything, and nothing really worked on his frame.
Is he still in Chicago? Is he a Chicago guy?
Oh, he's still working. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the one thing, not to sound sentimental, but it does bum me out to think what's happening right now is hurting a lot of guys like that. The working guys are getting fucked because of this whole thing. I mean, I don't even know how a lot of those guys are surviving, man.
I think the same about, you know, guys that overextended. Like, how many of these guys I'm going to go out. Fuck COVID. Is that because you fucking... You really thought that fucking pilot was going to take off and you overinvested?
Right, that's what it is.
How many fucking headliners are on the verge of getting a fucking day job just because they thought that gravy train would never end?
A lot of them. I mean, I would say that's why so many people are kind of showing very heavy signs of desperation, because this culture of Los Angeles makes people overspend. And in comedy, the bubble was bound to pop out here. It was so good because of what Rogan did for the store and what you saw in that documentary. It was like what was growing and happening there. I felt it in my bones. I said to my wife, I was like, this is popping, man. This is fucking... And I've always lived so below my means that this is the moment when I live below my means and I go, see, this fucking thing is... This is not a forever thing. There's no way. You know,
I remember going out there and Rogan coming out with open micer energy saying, this is fucking going on every night. You're going to move back. This is the shit. And it's obvious. I've met more comics like in one night, like Chris Rock and fucking David Spade and like all these people I'd never even met, and I'm just meeting them all, trying to get in line at the VIP bar in the back with Kerry Mitchell.
It's insane. What was happening there was reminiscent of a time that I never experienced. What I imagine, you know, that late 70s era was like, where it was fucking that comedy boom, hot as a pistol, so many stars and all that stuff. That's what the store kind of felt like the last 5 years was like. Fucking, you know.
I brought Junior Stopka there. Junior is a kid. When he first went on the road, it was only the second time he had flown, and I brought him. He was meeting me in Pittsburgh. He had to go to a website. It was a military website to learn how to fold his clothes to put him in a suitcase. Like, so he's the kid that you wanna, like.
Yeah.
He's in a hotel, you know, the ones they have the curtains have the pull rod,
right?
Sitting there spinning it for minutes before Bingo said, oh, Junior, no, we were in a Delta Sky Club in San Francisco. We had just done a gig and we were going on vacation to Hawaii, so why not bring Junior? And it was winter, so it was cold. We get in the Sky Club and it's a really small one, and I said, Junior, you should probably take off that fucking hoodie and all that. We're gonna land in 88 degrees So he changed. He started changing right there in the middle of a fucking Skype club. And I'm like, what are you doing? And he goes, oh, you said it was a private club. So he's just fucking adorable kid. I forget my point. What's my point?
It doesn't. Junior Stopka's your point that we need to look into.
Comedy Store.
Yeah.
So the Comedy Store, I take him to L.A. for the first time. Hennigan gets a suite on the corner of the old Hyatt House.
Yeah.
Looking over the Comedy Store. So we have this corner suite. We're staring down at the line of people that are coming in to see us. And like, it's just fucking bedwetting. And it was, that was like, it was so much more fun to have him experience that than me, because I've done this. And so I demanded someone get me a fucking small amount of coke before the show, just so he could do a bump off of that glass piano table in the green room. That green room is fucking magic.
It's historic as fuck. I mean, the amount of coke that's been done in that room is insurmountable. I think it beats any other place on earth. Like, it's, that place is was a late night mecca for Mitzi. That green room specifically, not the club, but that was where Mitzi was like, could hold court with all the most famous, and where, you know, if you weren't top tits, you couldn't get in, which is crazy. It was like a fucking nightclub inside of a nightclub.
You know, sometimes you fucking just need porn.
Yeah.
To get, I could, if I could transpose, like, I hang on, honey, I just need to watch some of the green room of the main room of the Comedy Store. And that just immediately makes me horny. I want to do coke and fuck someone.
That is the same. It's very Pavlovian. That's what that is. Yeah. Doing coke on that piano and being in that fucking room. Well, because the vibe, you know, I think what they...
That's the ghost of the Comedy Store. They say it's haunted, and that's the ghost, is when you go into that fucking room, you just want to do coke and
fuck. Coke and fuck. Yeah, it is someone doing coke fucking when you walk into ghost.
Or being possessed.
Right,
being
right.
Possessed by spirits that make you want to do horrible things.
Well, it's also because...
while your wife's in a coma.
Yeah, she'll never get out, you know? She'll never get out. It's also because that place, it does make you feel different. Of all the clubs I've worked across the country, most clubs feel like a room in a mall, or a room in a place, or a building. But it's rare to find a place when you walk in that you physically feel different. I think that's why there's so much talk about it when people, you know.
When it was dead, like really dead, I played there, you know, occasionally in those years. And when it was, you know, at its apex before COVID, it still had the same feeling.
Right.
Dead, it had the same feeling. Bustling, same weird feeling.
Totally.
Hey, this is Tracy. She wants to ask you if you know Carrie Mitchell while I take a piss.
Go piss. Tracy.
Well, I had to give you something to say. There's a conversation.
He's just peeing. I'm just saying hi.
You're good.
Hi, bartender.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
I'm good. I love you. I love the orange in your hair.
Thanks. I'm about to redo it. It'll be much brighter, but
I mean, I'm a real orange. I'm an original orange, but we appreciate you guys just the same, because you're spreading the good word.
Thank you. Yeah, but I'm definitely putting it out there.
What's the worst drink that you've made for Doug? What's the drink that he fucking hates?
Well, we made some when he was doing 30 Days in the Hole, the original one.
Uh-huh.
They were doing old fashioned drinks, and to me, the worst drink is the Negroni.
Yeah, I don't fuck with that.
It's disgusting. Oh,
it's so gross.
No, what's the ones I got for us at? What are they called?
It's a Z
or an A. We'll figure this out.
Aperol Spritz.
Okay, no, it's and I keep wanting to say Zazarac.
Sazerac.
Sazerac.
Yes, that's
right.
Right.
Yeah, that was my fault.
No, that is
fucking Dodgers. Mm-hmm. Fuck the Dodgers. Do you know Morgan Murphy? Yeah.
honestly, I'm not kidding. I was going to bring that up. So I reached out to Morgan because I know that you guys are friends. She's a massive baseball or sports fan. I hit her up because she was in the hospital to tell her that, like, it's so hard to not be corny when you're just like, I just want to say, I love you and I hope that everything is okay and that's it. You know, because like it's hard. I understand when people are going through shit that people check in and they want to know more for their sake than for your sake. But we talk some fun little shit and it was kind of nice. And I'm glad that she's all good and fucking feeling
good.
She's
in the clear. She's dealing with some shit.
Yeah.
The fucking brain stuff we're familiar with around this house.
It's crazy. That's crazy. I mean, it's just anytime they're opening up your fucking head makes me go to a place of just, that's the scariest shit on earth to me.
And she said that's a reason she never did hallucinogens, is she didn't want to have to deal with what she's going through recovering from brain surgery. And having done lots of hallucinogens, what she was describing, I completely understood.
Right.
I can, like, hear parts of my brain communicating with other parts of my brain, or I can actually feel myself healing. I get that. I've seen laughter come out of a shower head. So yeah, I get exactly.
Yes. I have felt those moments. Like I you brought her up because I'm sure of baseball. Cause she is an insane baseball fan. She's like a,
yeah, no, I keep, that's why I'm watching. I'm only hoping, we're only hoping the Dodgers lose so I can fuck with Morgan Murphy. Alluded to going into surgery, I said, yeah, she picked a good week to get that gruesome, embarrassing Dodgers tattoo taken off.
Right. Isn't that so funny to think that, like, it's because you love Morgan that you want the Dodgers to lose. Like, you're like, God, I want those fuckers to lose so bad.
Yeah, I want to talk shit to her.
Right. It's just like you... That's friendship. That's when you really love someone, you're like, I want tragedy to strike you, because even this operation she's having, it's going to be fun to rag on her about in a couple of months. It's going to be great, you know?
And I did hate the Dodgers anyway. It's not like I just picked one thing to fuck with her about. I hate the Dodgers, and how dare you be my friend and like them.
Right, right, right.
You have a Dodgers tattoo on my street. She lives three doors down.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
She has her place.
Because of you. It's all because of you.
Well, it's only, well, she wouldn't have come to my house if I didn't live here.
Yeah, no, the existence of that town will be stapled with your name on it for the rest of time. I guess, like, you will be the reason, in my opinion, that so many people will know what Bisbee is. Because when I heard somebody say, Stanhope's moving to Bisbee, and I thought that was a California place. I was like, oh, shit, cool, good for him.
And you lived in Arizona.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that fucking crazy? I had no idea what that was. I just thought, oh, good for him.
I lived here for a year and a half. I had never heard of Bisbee.
Do you think you will end up, you'll stay there forever or no?
Yes, absolutely. When I bought the place, it's the first house I ever bought. And I go, well, we're close to a hospital.
Yeah, that's good.
and there's only three stairs. So as a smoker early on, you work out these problems that.
When you stopped, you said you stopped smoking. What was the years of coming back?
That was 2008 when I did it for a year. And I got so fucking fat. I just stayed on my couch for 2 months till I had to go back on the road. Wore nothing but pajamas in the winter. Didn't realize I gained like 20 some pounds and my pants wouldn't fit. I did my first gig in Indianapolis in overalls. You can still find the footage out there. You want to find Fat Stanhope.
Fat Stanhope, by the way, it's a great character. It's very, very funny.
I wore overalls, ironically, but not.
Right, 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 right.
And someone bootlegged that show. It's still out there. And Hennigan saw the fucking bootleg and went, don't ever wear those on stage again. My manager rarely gives me advice, but it's usually something of that. Don't ever look like that.
Don't wear the overalls. They don't look good on you, dog. You, So we're hoping for two things to happen. The Dodgers to lose and now comedy for you, the reinvigoration of what that documentary did. Are you already writing? Like, are you writing again or no? I've
written down in 8 months, I've probably written down six premises or ideas.
Right.
I'm obviously not going to bother writing anything COVID related. Although I did have a fucking rant in my head today. But yeah, by the time I'm ever out there, I don't have anything on the books till late March or April.
Right. I mean, the only COVID stuff I would have is me getting COVID because I fucking had it. So talking about the experience is the only jokes that I feel like I would maybe make.
Oh, but even still, that's different. Yeah.
Yeah, but even still, it's almost like, the experience could be joked about, but I just feel like I've seen people joke about COVID so much on the internet that I'm just not interested in it that much for some. I'm just like, I don't know. Even having it, there wasn't much funny about it. It was fucking annoying. I was super fucking tired and annoyed, and I just wanted to get it over with. But I was, I will say the funniest part about COVID is how people react to you telling them you had it. It's really wild the way that people disseminate. They immediately disseminate what kind of person you are when you have had it. I don't know what their thought is, but I see how they're thinking. Do you know what I mean? Like, I watch their brain do this thing where they're like, oh.
I've been watching this social experiment of just the commune that we have together, people that live here,
right,
and our friends, and how the dynamic works. Because we do football Sunday, and we quarantine this house, the fun house, with the high-risk people, the older, fatter people.
Right.
And then we smokers sit out on the patio, distanced enough, but outside with the TV out there. But everyone's, like, there's been so much information or misinformation or growth of information that everyone has their own idea of what is safe.
Yeah, totally, totally.
Like I find myself going, no, he's really funny.
Yeah, you do think you get a pass. It's almost like I'm not, it's like when you say, I used to tell the story about being on a flight with Bob Knight, the basketball coach, who threw a chair in Indiana, this crazy basketball. Yeah, and it was like I was on a bumpy flight coming out of Wisconsin. It was going to crash. I felt like it was going to crash. And he was reading a New York Times like it was like nothing was happening. I was like, yeah. Dude, Bob Knight doesn't die like this. You know what I mean? It gave me this hope of like, fucking, we're fine, dude. This is going to get to Jersey.
With your luck, you would die on a fucking flight with a guy more famous, Bobby Knight, and 99 other people.
Of course, yeah. Bobby Knight, some redheaded cunt, and a few other people died, and it was worth the crash. All right, look, we end the episode the same way. I really appreciate you. I want to tell you, regardless of this disconnect and distance, it's been a pleasure, and I have been a forever fan. I think you're fucking a brilliant dude, and I don't want to suck your dick for the last minute and a half.
Oh, no, I'll suck your dick with a fact.
Yeah.
I had to do a fucking podcast with Aaron Berg.
Oh, yeah.
11 a.m. And I was the fucking worst, most boring guest because I didn't want to drink during it because I was saving that for you.
I love you. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
A sober podcast.
Well, I'll thank Aaron. Thanks, Aaron, for taking that early morning hit because I appreciate it. But I honestly, genuinely, without sounding cheap, but I'm excited to see what's next on the docket for only a few people, and you're one of the few people that I want to see what's coming up next for you because the times they are a change, and I think there's going to be some great fucking comedy that's birthed out of all this bullshit. I really, really do.
Yeah, after 9/11. I was fucking locked and loaded.
Yeah.
Because there was a definitive end that you could start piecing together your point of view.
Right.
And this, I have no fucking idea what's going on.
Yeah, but it's gonna be, it's gonna birth good comedy. I just know it'll birth good comedy. Just
yeah,
because
I don't see the end yet. These right. towers haven't crashed. I'm still watching.
But as soon as we get to the Pentagon, I'm excited, right? Like, as soon as we get there, we'll be good. So we end the episode the same way. I want you to look in the camera. You say one word or one phrase that takes us home. I'm going to walk off screen, and you're just going to say whatever the fuck you want to close the episode. All right.
It's not whether you win or lose. It's whether or not you wake up with a good story.
In here, we pour whiskey.
You were that creature in the ginger beard.
Sturdy and ginger.
Like vampires, the ginger gene is a curse.
Gingers are beautiful.
You owe me $5 for the whiskey and $75 for the horse.
Gingers, oh hell no.
This whiskey is excellent.
Ginger. I like gingers.